We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There's so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we've carved out a space just for you, the creative entrepreneur making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is much that we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today's guest is Kelly Wang Shanahan. She's the creative director and founder of Xeron, a fashion design company specializing in men and women's clothing and accessories. Kelly officially started her line in June 2016 after becoming disillusioned with the luxury fashion industry, particularly its waste and fast fashion mentality. She discovered a special fabric called Shung Yun Sha silk while researching ancient Chinese fabric techniques and instantly fell in love with both its luxurious beauty and cultural significance. All Xeron pieces are made from this special silk, which is imported from China, and then pieces are designed and manufactured locally to Kelly in Los Angeles. On today's episode, Kelly shares the long process of finding the silk, building the relationship with the silk boss in China, and gaining exclusive rights to use it with her products. Kelly shares what inspired her to keep going through this long process, how she leverages story and influencer marketing, and why relationships are a key component to business success. Hey, Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
It's my pleasure. Well, tell us about the types of products you sell. What are they and what makes them unique?
So I primarily sell a sustainable luxury silk from China. It's been made for 500 years in one town. It's only made with natural ingredients. For example, they use mud from the Pearl River. They coat the silk with mud. They use a vegetable juice called shuliang, which is just like an edible yam, and they dye it, and then they bake the silk in the sun up to 30 times, and they dye it just over and over and over again until it gets the desired consistency. And then the end result is the silk is antimicrobial, wrinkle resistant. It's super soft and nourishing on your skin. It's only made in this one region in southern China. I have exclusivity to it, so nobody else is using it outside of Asia. And it just feels really nice. It's completely handmade. Yeah, that's what makes it unique.
Very cool. So you have this silk fabric, and what kind of products are you creating from it? Is it just scarves, or is it other types of items too?
A lot of different things. Men's and women's, we do a lot of unisex as well. So like reversible bomber jackets, robes, pants, overalls, dresses, camp collar shirts. And then also we do accessories like eye masks, bandanas, scrunchies, pillowcases. So
oh, wow. It really does run the gamut. That's awesome. Did you always know that you wanted to be in the fashion industry?
No. Growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer, and that was kind of the plan. And I even took the LSAT, and then I kind of had a wake-up call in college when I was writing my thesis paper, and I discovered this silk and was like, you know what? I've been passionate about fashion. I kind of grew up sewing my own clothes, thrifting. So I kind of just veered in the other direction. I was like, I'm just going to do fashion. I'm going to use this silk, and then took off.
Awesome. So, okay, I want to back up and dig into this a little bit more. You researched and found this whole process of making this silk. Did you go then to check it out first before you – like, what was that process like of bringing this manufacturing process here?
So I wrote my paper on fashion in China over the past 100 years. And then through doing research, I found, oh, they make this silk in this crazy area. It's so beautiful, blah, blah, blah. And then I was completely enamored by it. And so I was like, I want to go to China and see how it's made.
Okay.
I'm half Chinese, so that probably was helpful that, you know, I already kind of had that foundation. So I went to China. I visited the silk farm. I saw how they made it. I was completely blown away. And then that's when I was like, this is what I want to do.
Okay. Do you know from the get-go of like how you wanted to leverage that process into specific products? Or did you just know, I want to check out this process, this manufacturing process, and then from there, I'll figure out how I want to layer it into physical goods?
Yeah. I had no experience, you know, with design or making anything. I just knew I really loved this story and the fact that it's sustainable and this element of cultural heritage. And then once I found the silk, then I was like, okay, how do I actually use this? So then I went to fashion school.
Okay.
And at fashion school, that's when I kind of like developed a little bit more of a foundation.
You know, one of the questions I hear a lot from product makers is, you know, they love the creation process, the dreaming big, everything that goes into actually making things, right? But they struggle with the business side of things. Back in the early days, what kind of struggles did you have with regards to getting the business moving?
I feel like specifically in fashion, there's a lot of the manufacturers and vendors, they don't have websites, they're not online, they're very difficult to find. And so kind of knowing like, oh, well, who's going to be my pattern maker and who's going to sew and how do I get connected to those people? So I was doing a lot of asking around and trial and error, working with some people who, you know, would make mistakes or they would like cut corners. And that was kind of a struggle in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Now I've kind of ironed it out, but there are still always, you know, it's production. There's always going to be issues. That's one thing. And another has been just kind of building the audience is a little bit difficult. It's lucky now though that there's Instagram and social media, which is just like a free platform. But I'd say like finding the customers in the beginning and kind of building it and then working with like reliable, good people.
Yeah. Especially because you were bringing a new manufacturing process essentially here and needing people to kind of replicate that. I assume that was difficult.
Yeah. So I actually import the silk from China and bring it here and then we manufacture in Los Angeles.
Okay. I misunderstood. I thought you did the silk processing here as well as the manufacturing. So you bring it. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Talking about social media a little bit more, when I started my product-based business in 2008, Twitter was our jam because that was what there was to use, you know, to connect with other colleagues in the industry and ask for advice as well as our buyers. And now, you know, that we have the visual component of Instagram and Facebook and all these other things, it really does make a difference in how you can connect and reach with people. But it's also not perfect. How have you leveraged that in your business to connect with customers?
I try to make every collection or drop have a deeper story and have a meaning behind it, because I feel like, especially with social media, there's so much noise. You're just inundated with different images and pictures and it kind of just becomes a blur. But I think if you frame it in a way where you're kind of telling a story or there's a little bit more of a backbone to it, it is more authentic and it resonates more with people. Instead of just like, oh, look at this dress. It's like, this dress was inspired by this silhouette, which was done in this time period because of these reasons, whatever it is, you know, they're just, I think that that is how I've kind of tried to do it. Otherwise, there's just so much. It's like overwhelming anyways for the consumer.
Yeah, you have to find different ways to draw them in for sure. Now, which sales channels are you currently utilizing? Are you doing wholesale, retail, both?
Both wholesale and also retail. We have an online store.
Okay, cool. And so you mentioned you're using social media for marketing. Are there any other marketing tools and things that you're using to reach either wholesale or retail audiences?
I mean, I do email blasts. I have like a list of people, of subscribers. Email blasts and Instagram is primarily the tools I use. I think also I will work with like select influencers or musicians or rappers and then kind of, you know, piggyback on their audience to help like push it forward. But that's mostly done through Instagram too.
Can you share a little bit more about the influencer marketing? Like, are you giving them product? Are you paying them to share your stuff? Like, how does that work for you?
In the past, I gave away product and there's mixed results with that. I think now I've been way more selective, especially I've been more selective with who, either if I'm gifting or I'll sometimes do stuff at either gift or give a discount. But I'm just way more, before I would just be like, here's a bandana to a bunch of different people and then wait and then nothing would happen. So, or even if they did post, that doesn't translate to sales. It doesn't translate to followers, right?
Right.
So now I've tried to be more strategic with the people that I align with and make sure that they're actually supporters of the brand in an authentic way and they actually vibe with it. And I found that that is worthwhile. that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you have like a criteria of things that you look for in influencers? Like, do you want them to have a certain number of followers or catering to a certain audience? Like, how do you know that there's brand alignment with the people you're trying to work with there?
I don't think that the followers matter because you could have, you know, 500,000 followers and your engagement is super low. I feel like it's right. I agree. Or vice versa. So I just look at people who I think are like brand ambassadors, who their core values and what they, you know, represent through their platform aligns with like my values. So, mm-hmm. or the brand's values. So like sustainability, being conscious, the idea that like more isn't necessarily better and that quality is important. And then also if they just have an overall message, that there's more to what they're doing than just being like, hey, look at me, buy this dress, right? Or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. Yeah, I think there's a misconception when people talk about influencer marketing, and we don't need to go super deep into this because I want to talk more about your business and what you're doing. But I think there is a misconception that I'll just send my product to everyone, as you talked about, and they'll post about it, and then sales will come flooding in. And really, it's everything in business, including influencer marketing, it goes back to building relationships and connecting with people that have shared values and, you know, are speaking to the same types of people in the same audience where there is overlap, and doing it, to your point earlier, in an authentic, storytelling, interesting way. So it's not just, you know,
yeah,
I'm being paid to share this, do it,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
go buy it or whatever.
And people are smart now. They can see through that. It's very transparent. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I agree. So you've been in business just over 3 years at this point. What successes are you most proud of in your business?
I guess there's a couple things. One, I'm proud that I can continue this ancient tradition and this ancient craft here in the United States, in the Western world, because right now in China, they use the silk, but it's literally for like middle-aged/grandmas who are wearing traditional Chinese shirts. Nobody's been like, oh, let's take this thing and make it contemporary. So mm-hmm. I'm proud that I've been able to do that and kind of help bring this ancient thing into modern times and make it relevant today.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of the sustainability element of it because that has to be the future, right? And also, just when people, either my clients or my friends who have purchased things, when they tell me how good it makes them feel, how they get compliments, how special it is, that just makes me very happy.
Oh, yeah. Me, I can completely relate. I mean, you work so hard on this thing and then you send it off into the world and you hope it brings everyone else just as much joy as it did you, you know? So to get that positive feedback is super important. Can I ask questions about, and you can tell me no if it's not okay, but like you mentioned early on that you have exclusive rights to this silk. So they are not able to sell the silk to anyone else. How did you go about negotiating that? Or, you know, is there only one person making this? I mean, I'm assuming there's several people and several plants making the silk over there. How did you get this exclusivity?
In Chinese, it's called guanxi, which is like kind of, it's like networking and personal relationship. But basically there are a very small handful of people making it, but there's like one guy who is kind of like the big boss, who is more solidified, has more factories, has more like workers. And so he's kind of like the one that is really truly like making it on a larger scale. And I spent years, because I decided I wanted to do this in 2010. So that was about 9 years ago. So it took me like 6 years, give or take, like, you know, a little bit of time for me to actually like start it. So in that time, I was going to China. I was learning everything I could from the silk boss. Because he's very passionate about the culture and the like philosophy behind making it. And that's what I'm passionate about too. So I think we kind of aligned in that way. And I just spent time building my relationship with him. And it took a little bit of convincing for me to be like, look, nobody, I will be the like gatekeeper for this product for you. You know, nobody, I will help you like build it and make it so that you can spread this worldwide. Otherwise you have nobody. So I'm the first person. So you should just, you know, go with me in that for that reason. And because our values are aligned and I want the same things you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating, and I'm so appreciative that you shared the long backstory that went into, like, you had to figure out, you found the manufacturing process, you knew this was a silk you wanted to use, you had to build the relationships and convince them to give you the, you know, the right to use them on your products. And then you started your journey of creating your products. And then there was that whole, it sounds like the second round of finding manufacturers in terms of like the seamstress and the pattern makers and the people that could actually help you bring your designs to life. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
That is such a long process.
I know. There's still so much more to do.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
It's a good thing you held on, huh? Because your work is beautiful, but that's a long, some people might have given up by then. What kept you going?
I think what kept me going is just wanting to continue, just wanting to preserve and save this craft.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in a world where everybody is consuming everything so quickly. You know, a lot of machines are making things, and just the like tangibleness of these like handcrafted products where every yardist silk is different. There's variations in color and tone. And I guess I just have like a deep appreciation for something like that. So I see the value, and by seeing the value, I will work to make it happen.
Yeah.
Sort of. And I know it's something different that nobody else, it's, there's nothing like it, you know? So
you have a huge selling proposition there because it is so unique. It has the story behind it. I think it does set you apart from other fashion designers that are probably making similar types of garments that you're making, but yet the story behind yours makes it so much more unique and the sustainability of it. So, you know, I hear, I haven't been in the fashion industry, but I hear that the fashion industry is pretty tough. Like it's, you mentioned earlier, like, you know, you reached out to colleagues to help find things and you couldn't find manufacturers online and things like this. What have you done to build relationships here locally within your industry and to connect with others that are doing things that you're doing?
I've held a couple events at my studio. One of them was a panel that was based about, like, I had different designers and different brands come and speak on the panel. We spoke on manufacturing in Los Angeles, how to kind of navigate that, and just kind of running a small business. Being a small fashion brand is super difficult because you don't have a lot of money backing you, whereas, you know, all the big brands can just spend endless amounts on any kind of marketing or on, you know, events. So kind of just creating, we kind of have like a little community where we can help each other out. And if somebody asks me, you know, oh, where do you do smocking? I'll instantly be like, oh, go to this place. He's a third generation smocker in Boyle Heights. Like, you know, because yeah. I also want to help that guy continue what he's doing. So there's kind of an openness among us who are making clothes in Los Angeles where we're kind of open to share what we know because we all know how hard it is and we all know we're in it together. So we kind of can form alliances, I guess.
I love hearing that because, you know, I think the outside perspective is that it's a cutthroat industry, you know, and but within my world, I feel the exact same way that you do. I feel like when one of us finds success, all of us gain success from that, you know, and the more we can share, the stronger all of our individual businesses will become. So I'm glad to hear that you have that community within your own circle as well. Yeah,
definitely.
We talked about some of the struggles you had and transitions you had in the earlier days. What kind of stuff are you working through now? Because as we go through this business journey, we do hit different hiccups along the way, right? So as the business grows, the problems get a little maybe bigger or different. What are you kind of working through now?
Right now, a problem is like, so I will have meetings, you know, right now my spring summer collection is in New York for Market Week. And so we're doing sales. And sometimes there's kind of a issue with kind of the major retailers that they like the brand and they like the product, but they say, oh, not enough people like know about it yet. So it's kind of a catch-22 where it's, you don't pick up the line because people don't know about it, but how are people supposed to know about it if you don't pick up the line, right? So there's kind of that like tension. That's an issue. But then there's also ways to get around that where if I sell to other like smaller boutiques and they instantly understand their salespeople are more dedicated. It's easier, but their order size isn't as big, right?
Right, right.
I think also manufacturing in Los Angeles is very, very expensive. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, you know, I don't necessarily want to manufacture abroad or overseas, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'm kind of debating whether that's the call, if I need to go do that, because then, you know, I can produce higher volumes for cheaper. Yeah. So that's kind of.
It affects timeline and cash flow then too, because yes, you can do higher volume at a lower price, but you also have to start the process much earlier when you're working overseas. So it's definitely, there's a lot of different things to balance there. You know, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are just starting out in the fashion world that, you know, have some ideas, but they're not really a formal business at this point?
First, I would get experience in the industry working for a brand. I did that for 5 years. I worked for a luxury brand in Los Angeles. That was a small brand. I would say work for a smaller brand, because then you're not pigeonholed into one thing and you can kind of see and hear everything. But really gaining experience is very, very important, because then when it comes to you making decisions, you already have a frame of reference and can kind of know where you need to go. Also networking, going to fashion events, even though they're lame and people aren't very nice, you still gotta go. And I think just sharing what you're working on and talking to as many people as possible, because people all have different opinions and can give you different advice, or somebody will know somebody who will know somebody, and like kind of that is very helpful. But mainly I would say getting experience, and then also like refining your idea. And still, just because you have the idea doesn't mean that's it. Keep on working on that idea and changing it and tweaking it and pivoting.
Yeah, I love that. Something you just mentioned is everyone has opinions and they have advice for you. I think we could both agree that sometimes that advice is not warranted, or, you know, the unsolicited stuff cannot make it. It doesn't fit into your overall business plan or where you're trying to go. What do you do when you start to get advice from people that may not fit your goals or your plans or your direction?
I thank them for it. And then I'll think about it. You know, like I don't want to just discount whatever anybody says, because I know I've made mistakes and I'm not always right.
Right.
But I'll process and think about it. Sometimes if they're like a close person, you know, that I'm close with, I'll like, we'll go back and forth and I'll, you know, we'll kind of like have a discussion. But most of the time I'm just like, cool, thanks.
Right. Smile and nod. Thank you. Yeah. It's interesting. I tell my clients, I've had a lot of clients lately that have been getting hung up basically on the feedback, because it's been market time, like summer markets are here. And so, you know, buyers are walking through and giving lots of different unsolicited advice. And some newer brands really feel like they need to cater to the advice that's given and like, you know, bend over backwards. But at the same time, you know, if you're only hearing it from one person, I would listen, I would take the feedback, but be cautious to make changes. I think when you start to hear the same type of feedback over and over, that's when you might want to make some changes. But I agree with you. I think there's a balance between like being gracious and saying thank you, but also having the confidence within yourself as an entrepreneur and the creator of the products you're making to move forward in the direction.
Right. Like you got there for a reason on your own. So you should follow your gut and your intuition too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So what are you working on next? You mentioned you're already working on, you said your spring collection. Is that correct? So what's coming out the rest of the year? What are you doing? What are you working on?
Right now we are working on a fun summer drop that we're going to drop first week of August. And it's like reversible bucket hats and some fun half and half shirts and shorts for men and for women.
So fun.
I'm working on women's spring summer 20 designing. I'm doing a couple collaborations with other artists and influencers. One of them I'm excited about will drop in Halloween, and it's kind of like skeleton spooky themed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Very cool.
Just designing and projects, you know.
Running the business, day-to-day stuff, wearing all the hats, I'm sure. Yes. Yep. Cool. Well, where can people find you online if they want to check out your products or follow you on social media?
Instagram is at TheZiron, Z-I-R-A-N, and then the website's TheZiron.com, and Facebook is TheZiron as well.
Excellent. Well, we will include all those links in the show notes so they can easily find you. Thank you for coming on to share your story and talk about how you built this business. I think your process of sourcing your silk is phenomenal. I love that you dip back into your own culture, your own heritage, and you're bringing something forward that's going to, that has the sustainability factor and just such a special story behind it.
Thank you so much for having me.
When it comes to scaling a product-based business, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they spread themselves too thin. They're trying to sell retail in their online shop. Maybe they're doing retail craft shows. Maybe they're dabbling in wholesale. They're picking up some custom jobs on the side. And maybe they're even trying out licensing. But when you do all of those different things, or even just a combination of them, you're spreading yourself too thin, because each of those requires different sales strategies, different marketing strategies, and you're catering to a different audience, a different customer. So the first thing I want to tell you to do is stop spreading yourself too thin. Instead, build systematically. Do one and get that going really well before you add in another sales channel. And two, if you are considering whether or not wholesale is a right next step for your business, I invite you to join me for my free masterclass, Is Wholesale Right for You? It's available at prooftoproduct.com/wholesale. It's available anytime you want to watch it. It's on demand in about 30 minutes. And I'm going to run you through some concrete things you need to have ready or you need to think about before you wholesale, so that you can walk away knowing whether wholesale is the right next step for your business. So again, that's prooftoproduct.com/wholesale. Look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.